yesterday we were talking about the anagami or a non-returner. The stage of anagami is the third stage of enlightenment. And when a person reaches this stage, he eradicates desire for sense objects and ill will. So an anagami has no longer desire for things in the world, and also he has no hate, anger, and fear. So anagami is almost like an arahant. But regarding the fetters, there still remain 5 fetters he has not eradicated. And anagami has desire for rupa vajra ram and arupa vajra ram, form ram and formless ram. That means he has attachment to the existence of the Brahmas who have both mind and body, and also to the realm of Brahmas who have no physical body but mind only. So for these two realms, he still has desire. He still wants to be reborn there. And also it is said that he still has mana, pride. It may be very, very small, very thin mana, but still he has this mana. And this mana, mostly mana is based on wrong view, the eye. But since he has eradicated wrong view long ago, his mana is not based on the wrong view as I, but still he has a kind of pride, maybe pride in himself, I know, I see, and so on. And so he has a little of pride left in himself. And he has what is called restlessness. Restlessness means the mind being not able to be on the object properly. It is the mind shaking above the object. Now when yogis practice meditation, also sometimes they cannot see the object clearly. Now their mind is not distracted to other objects. Their mind is on the meditation objects, but they do not see clearly. Their mind is, as it were, a little away from the object, shaking above it. So something like that. So that kind of restlessness or agitation is still with the ones, non-returners. And also that must be very weak and very, very thin, because anagamis are described as those who have accomplished the fulfillment of samadhi, concentration. That means they are very strong in samadhi or concentration. And restlessness is opposite of concentration. So although an anagami cannot eradicate restlessness altogether, his remaining restlessness must be very small. And restlessness means restlessness of mind and not the body. And also he still has what is called avidya, ignorance. Now, to say that anagami still has ignorance is like an insult to him. Again, this ignorance is not the ignorance that Putujana, Sotapanas, and Sagadagamis possess. So his ignorance is here, not knowing the true nature of maybe the form sphere realm and formless sphere realm, because he still wants to be reborn in those realms. So a little ignorance is left with him. So actually, anagami has very little mental defilements remaining with him. And mostly, anagamis are reborn in the pure abode of the Brahma realm. Now there are 20 Brahma realms, and one of them is the realm of Brahmas who have physical body only, who have no mind. And four of them are the realms of Brahmas who have mind only and no physical body. The rest 15 are the realms of Brahma who have both physical body and mind. And among these 15, the highest 5 realms are called pure abodes or abodes of pure persons. Since they have reached the third stage of enlightenment, they have eradicated many mental defilements, and they have no desire for sensual things. They are said to be pure beings, and so they are reborn there. Now, only those who get jhanas can be reborn in the world of Brahmas. But what if a person becomes an anagami without jhana? There can be anagamis who reached the stage of anagami without the attainment of jhanas. Now, it is said that since anagamis are those who are accomplished in the fulfillment of samadhi, or concentration, they will definitely get jhanas before they die, or when the time comes near to death. So, the anagamis are mostly reborn in these 5 pure abodes. After a person becomes an anagami, he is able to get into the phalasamapatti of anagami when he wishes. It is not difficult for him to enter into that phalasamapatti simply because this stage, he has attained this stage. Now the Venerable Mahakothika asks, what are the things that a bhikkhu who is a non-returner should carefully attend to? So what must an anagami observe? And the answer is the same as for stream enterer and once returner. So the Venerable Sariputta said, a bhikkhu who is a non-returner should carefully attend to these five aggregates, subjective clinging as impermanent, and so on. When a bhikkhu who is a non-returner carefully attends thus to these five aggregates, subjective clinging, it is possible that he may realize the fruit of arahantship. So there is a possibility that if an anagami practices meditation on the five aggregates of clinging, he will realize or he will reach the fruit of arahantship. He will become an arahant. So then an anagami has to practice meditation to reach the higher stage of arahantship. Now when he practices vipassana meditation to get into the palasamapati, it is not difficult for him to get into. But when he tries to reach the higher stage through practice of vipassana, he has to make effort. He has to go through all the different stages of vipassana. When he reaches the next higher stage of arahantship, he is able to eradicate all the remaining mental defilements or remaining five fetters. So when a person becomes an arahant, he has no mental defilements at all, because some mental defilements are eradicated during the lower stages, and the remaining five are eradicated at the attainment of arahantship. So an arahant is a person whose mind is totally pure, whose mind is totally pure from all mental defilements. So an arahant is not capable of becoming attached to anything, not capable of getting angry even when there is provocation, not capable of envy, jealousy, and so on. So he has no mental defilements at all after he becomes an arahant. An arahant is described in the discourses and also in the Abhidhamma as one who has destroyed the taints means just mental defilements. So an arahant is a person who has destroyed all mental defilements, so who no longer has any defilements in his mind, and he is also described as one who has lived the holy life. Now, who has practiced meditation and reached arahantship. And so he is said to have lived the holy life. Now, in order to live the holy life, one has to practice, one has to be perfect in sila, and one has to practice meditation, and one has to have reached the state of freedom from mental defilements. Since an arahant is such a person, he is described as one who has lived the holy life. He is also described as one who has done what has to be done. Now, Putujanas and also the persons who have attained lower stages of enlightenment. So they are called those who are doing what has to be done. They are still doing something. They are still trying to attain enlightenment. And so they are people who are still doing something to reach that stage. An arahant has reached the highest stage, and so he is the person who has done what is to be done for attainment of the total purification of mind, or for attainment of the higher stage of enlightenment. Since he has nothing to do for reaching enlightenment, because he has already reached the highest stage of enlightenment, he is described as one who has done what has to be done. And he is described as one who has laid down the burden. Now, aggregates are described as burdens, because when you have five aggregates, it is like a burden. You have to take care of them, you have to nurture them, you have to attend to them every day, and so on. And so it is a big burden that we have the five aggregates. And also, the mental defilements are called burden, because they are the causes of the burden of aggregates. And also, karma is called burden. So long as you have karma, you will be reborn again and again. That means you will be getting the five aggregates again and again, or you will be getting this burden again and again. So persons who have not eradicated mental defilements are those who are carrying these the heavy burdens at every moment. Since arahants have destroyed all mental defilements, since among the mental defilements there are craving and ignorance, which are the roots of all existence. So since an arahant has eradicated all mental defilements, he is said to have one who has laid down, who has thrown away the big burden of mental the aggregates, mental defilements, and karma. And an arahant is described as one who has reached his own goal. So one's own goal means arahantship, or becoming an arahant. Because for most beings, the goal is to reach arahantship or to become arahants. Because according to the teachings of Theravada, not everybody can become Buddhas. So reaching arahantship is practical, and it is not so difficult as reaching Buddhahood. So arahantship is called one's own goal. And a person who has reached the arahantship is called a person who has reached his own goal. And he is also described as one filters of existence are exhausted. That means who have destroyed the fetters to existence. Now there are 10 fetters, like sensual desire and so on, and they are called fetters because they bind beings to this round of rebirth, and also they connect one existence with another. That means so long as there are fetters, there will be rebirth. So when rebirth occurs, it is like these fetters connect the previous life with new life. So these mental states are called fetters, and an arahant has destroyed all fetters, all 10 fetters. So he is free from fetters, and so he has no fetters that would bind him to the existence, that would bind him to the round of rebirths. He is also described as one who is completely liberated through understanding correctly. Now, understanding correctly means understanding the aggregate correctly, understanding the basis correctly, understanding the elements correctly, understanding the Four Noble Truths correctly, understanding that all conditions, phenomena are impermanent, suffering, and non-soul. So an arahant is one who understands all these correctly, and because he understands them correctly, he reached the stage of arahantship. So he is described as one who is completely liberated through correctly understanding. Now when this correct understanding comes and he becomes an arahant, he is completely liberated from round of rebirth, from mental defilements. Since he is fully liberated, he will not be reborn in this round of rebirth. So you find this description of arahants in many discourses, and from these the descriptions you know what an arahant is. So arahant is a person who has reached the highest stage of enlightenment. Arahant is a person who has eradicated all mental defilements. Since he has eradicated all mental defilements, there is no more rebirth for him. So arahant is described as one who has done what has to be done, and so one who has nothing more to be done for gaining enlightenment. So what does an arahant do after he becomes an arahant? Retirement? So, Venerable Kotika wants to know that. So he asked the Venerable Sariputta, and the answer was, a bhikkhu who is an arahant should carefully attend to these 5 aggregates subject to clinging as impermanent, as suffering, and so on. Just this one comes again and again and again. A person who is a Buddhojana observe the five aggregates of clinging as impermanent and so on. His Ottabana has to do the same. His Agadagami and Nagami to do the same. Even Arhan, after becoming an Arhan, after he has done what is to be done, he has no more to be done regarding the attainment of enlightenment. But here, the Venerable Sariputta said he still should carefully attend to the five aggregates of clinging as impermanent and so on. So for the other persons, he said there is a possibility that he might realize Sotapannaship, Sakadagamiship and so on. So here he said, there is nothing further that is to be and no repetition of what he has already done. So Arahant has nothing further to do. And also there is nothing further to be and no repetition of what he has already done. However, when these things are developed and cultivated, they lead to a pleasant dwelling in this very life. That is one benefit an Arahant gets from observing the five aggregates as impermanent and so on. And to mindfulness and clear comprehension. That is the second benefit an Arahant gets from observing the five aggregates as impermanent and so on. So this means that even after becoming an Arahant, he practices Vipassana meditation. So do not think that if you become an Arahant, you can retire from the practice of Vipassana meditation. So Vipassana meditation is a lifelong work. Even after becoming an Arahant, you go on practicing Vipassana meditation. Arahants did go on practicing Vipassana meditation even after they have attained Arahantship. For what purpose? For two purposes. One is to lead a pleasant dwelling, to live a pleasant dwelling in this very life. And the second purpose is to develop mindfulness and clear comprehension. So the first purpose they have in mind when they practice Vipassana meditation is living happily or living comfortably in this very life. Now, Arahants always view this life as burning. For them, it is a burning house, burning with birth, aging, death, and diseases, and so on. So they never are comfortable living in this burning world. So as far as it is possible, they want to get away from this burning world. But they are still living and they cannot get out of this life yet. So what they do is they take Nibbana as object. When their mind is on Nibbana, when their mind takes Nibbana as object, they experience joy and peacefulness. Nibbana is very peaceful, and so the mind that takes Nibbana as object is also very peaceful. Now you can imagine thinking of something that is peaceful to you. When you are thinking of something that is peaceful, you become peaceful. In the same way, when the minds of arahants take Nibbana as object, the experience that unsurpassable peacefulness. And that peacefulness they value greatly. So whenever they can, they get into that state of happiness, and that is entering into phala samapatti. So entering into phala samapatti means entering into a stage where mind takes Nibbana as object for as long as one wants. And they can be in that state for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and so on, maybe until 7 days for human beings. Because human beings cannot live without food for, say, more than 7 days. And so, for human beings, the maximum period that they can be without food is supposed to be 7 days. So they can be in the phala samapatti for 7 days. And enjoy the bliss of Nibbana. Not enjoyment like enjoying sensual pleasures, but it is the best of the enjoyment of peacefulness. So for this purpose, they practice Vipassana meditation, because to enter into phala samapatti, one has to practice Vipassana meditation. Without Vipassana meditation, no one can get into the attainment of the fruition of phala samapatti. The other purpose is to maintain mindfulness and clear comprehension. We think that arahants are always mindful and they don't need to do anything to maintain mindfulness and clear comprehension. But that is not true. So here it is said that arahants, after they become arahants, they make effort to maintain mindfulness and clear comprehension. Now, there are two kinds of arahants. Constantly living with mindfulness and not constantly living with mindfulness. So maybe there were arahants who did not practice as much mindfulness as they did before. Now we think that arahants always practice mindfulness, but I think there may be some arahants who are not able to practice mindfulness much because they might have to attend to other things at the monastery. Some arahants may be appointed to oversee the repair work at the monastery and so on, and some might be appointed to take care of the robes of the Sangha and so on. So when they are occupied with these duties of the Sangha, because they cannot refuse to do the duties of the Sangha. So when they are occupied with the duties of the Sangha and so on, they could not pay much attention to practicing mindfulness, maybe. So there are two kinds of arahants. Those who practice, who live with mindfulness constantly, and who do not. Now, what is the difference between these two? The difference is those who maintain mindfulness and clear comprehension can get into Phalasamapatti very easily because they have always maintained mindfulness and clear comprehension. But those who do not practice mindfulness much after they become arahants are not able to get into Phalasamapatti easily. So that is a difference. So maintaining mindfulness and clear comprehension is actually to be able to enter into Phalasamapatti without difficulty. So there are two kinds of arahants. Constantly living with mindfulness and not constantly living with mindfulness. So, according to the answer given by the Venerable Sariputta, observation of five aggregates of clinging must be carried on by everybody and at all time. Now, an arahant is described as one who has destroyed the fetters of existence. That means who will have no rebirth in the future. Regarding this, people want to ask, what happens to an arahant after his parinibbana or passing away, or just, let's say, after his death? Well, asked, is a being exist after his death? Buddha did not answer. There are some questions Buddha never answered. Since Buddha did not answer, how can we? So there is no answer to this question. What happens to an arahant after his death? And it is advised that we are not to say that arahant disappears altogether after his death. That is because even before his death, in ultimate analysis, there is no arahant, there is no person. There are only the five aggregates. Since there is no arahant in reality, the question, what happens after the death of an arahant, is impractical or irrelevant. Since there is no being, no arahant, how can we ask what happens to an arahant after his death? So, but we can say there is no more rebirth after the death of an arahant. He is described as one who has destroyed the fetters of existence. And also he is described, or when they declare their arahantship, they always say, birth is exhausted, right? So that means, and also say, this is the last birth, there is no more. So Buddhas and arahants have no more rebirth in the future. Rebirth can take place only when there are the causes of rebirth, when there are those mental states that create rebirth. And those are, in general, mental defilements, and in particular, attachment or craving and ignorance. So long as we have ignorance, we will be attached to things. We will be attached to our lives. So when there is attachment, we do something. We do wholesome or unwholesome actions. And since we do wholesome or unwholesome actions, we are bound to get the results of these actions. We cannot avoid getting the results of these actions. So for those who still have ignorance and craving, there is always rebirth. But for those who do not have ignorance and craving, who do not have any attachment to anything at all, there is no rebirth. So, arahants and Buddhas, when they die, and there is no more of them in the future. Now, the death of an arahant is compared to a lamp going out in the Ratana Sutta or Jewel Sutta. So there Buddha said, just as this lamp, those arahants go out. So we can only say that there is no rebirth for arahants and Buddhas after their death. We cannot answer what happened to them after death, or they disappear altogether and there are no more of them. But we just say there is no more rebirth for them. So long as beings cannot eradicate mental defilements, cannot eradicate ignorance and craving, there will always be rebirth. Now, we have no difficulty in believing in rebirth. We are born to Buddhism. We are born to Buddhist parents. And so we do not have difficulty about rebirth. And also, we think we have some evidences that show that there is rebirth. My mother died in 1980. And when she was sick, I was not able to go back to Burma. I got a phone call from my brother and I asked him about the condition of mother, and he said, it's not so bad. But 2 days later, she was dead. And I couldn't go back. And then I went back to Burma in 1993. And when I met my sisters, one of them said, Bhante, mother is reborn as a boy in our family. So in the past life, she was my mother, and now she is a grandnephew of me. So we believe that, because there are some evidences to believe that he was my mother reborn as a boy. So we have no difficulty when we come across such instances. But people in the West are different. They have difficulty in accepting or believing in rebirth, especially those who, or many, most of them who are brought up under Christianity. So according to Christianity, there is only one more rebirth for you, either heaven or hell, no more. So for them, it is very difficult. However much the convincing evidences we may put forward, they will always try to find some ways to discredit it. And they may make the person concerned confused by asking him many questions, and so that he contradicts himself, and so and they said, no, it is not to be taken as authentic or something like that. But when we use our logic, logical thinking, I think we can believe in rebirth. One thing is, if you really want to have the convincing evidence about rebirth, try to get the abhinyas or supernormal knowledge. You practice meditation, you try to get those abhinyas. Once you get the abhinyas, the supernormal knowledge that can remember past lives and also that can see beings dying and being reborn, then you will be able to accept or believe in rebirth. But if you don't want to do that and then you just say, I don't believe, it is not fair. So sure thing is try to get that abhinya. Now, if we want to see very small things, then we use magnifying glass or microscopes, right? Without using them, we cannot see them. And simply because we cannot see them, we cannot see that they are non-existent. So if you want to see very small things, just get a microscope and you will see them. So in the same way, if you want to be convinced of rebirth, try to get the abhinya, and then you will see that it is true. That is one thing. Now, there is difference in human beings. Even the children born of the same parents are different. Among the children, one is intelligent, the other is dull. One is good-natured, and the other is bully, and so on. And so there is difference even between those who are born of the same parents. They are born of the same parents, and they are brought up under the same conditions. But still there is difference. So why is this difference? We cannot find the difference in this life because they were born of the same parents and they were brought up under the same conditions. So there must be something that is a cause of their difference. And if we cannot find that cause in this life, we must find it somewhere in the past. So we go back to the past, and although we cannot see with our own eyes, we can guess that it must be something they did in the past that causes this difference. They must have done something in the past. One must have done something to be intelligent, the other didn't care about this and so on. And so when they are born different in this life, although they are born of the same parents and brought up under the same conditions. So considering this, we can at least guess that there must be something that is the cause of this difference, and this must be in the past. So there must be something in the past, and that is the life in the past. If we can accept life in the past like this, we can accept life in the future. And also there are what are called human prodigies, those who can speak Greek at the age of 4 and so on. So how did they get this ability to speak a very different language at the age of 4 or 3? So it must have come from the past. So considering like that, I think we can understand or we can accept that there is life in the past, and something in that past life, conditions, the nature of or the particle, the difference in the children here born of the same parents. Mind has great power. It can produce or it can create material properties or material things. If a person is under stress for a long time, he will become looking very old. He will have gray hair, although he is maybe about 30 or 40 years old. His appearance may have changed beyond recognition. And why is that? Because his mind was under stress. His mind was not happy. His mind was sad, depressed, and so on. So that means the depression or the bad state of mind produces bad material properties in his body. That is why he looks very old in a few years, and so on. And also, when a person is happy, with little stress and so on, he looks young. So there is a saying in Burmese that when your mind is young, you are young. So that is the effect of mind on matter. So mind has great power to produce material things. And in our bodies, there are material properties that are produced by mind. And there are other material properties that are produced by karma and so on. So when we think of mind as having great power to produce even material things, we can understand that it can produce material things and also other states of mind as rebirth. Now, we believe in the law of karma. Karma is a mental state. A mental state has great power. Now, take for example your hand. Your hand is a physical thing, so it is much heavier than your mind. Your mind has no weight. It has no substance, but you know that you have there is the mind, and that mind, which has no substance, can cause this hand to move. When we have the mind to move, there is a movement. When we don't want to move, there is no movement. So this heavy thing, a material thing, by itself, it cannot move. Once mind leaves our body, we become as good as locks, or as bad as locks. So mind has this power to cause movements. And we walk because we want to walk. So the whole body, the very heavy physical body, moves because we have the mind to push this body to move. So mind has this power. And when we do something, let us say we kill beings. When we kill beings, that means we want their life to be short. We want to cut their lives. So we kill them. So when we kill them, there is the mental volition in our minds that has the desire for their lives to be short. And that mental state or mental volition has the power to produce results. And so it produces results. And what results will it produce? Since its desire is for life to be short, life of other beings, when it gives results, it gives the same kind of result to one who does that action. So the mental state gives results. Since this mental state belongs to this person, then this person gets the result of that action. Since by killing one wants the life to be short, when it gives results, the result is a short life. So that is why Buddha said, those who live short in this life are those who did a lot of killing in the past. So the mind has power, and it can give results in this life, but when it cannot give results in this life, but it has the potential to give results, then it will give results in other lives. So in order to allow this mental state to be able to give results, we have to accept that there is life other than this one. There is life in the future, and there is life in the past. So thinking that way also, we can accept that there is other life, there is rebirth. We all have mental defilements. We have ignorance, we have craving, and other mental defilements. Blinded by ignorance, we crave for this existence or that existence. And with these two things in the background, we do sometimes wholesome deeds and sometimes unwholesome deeds. So there are three things: ignorance, craving, and karma. When a person dies, these three things together contrived to push that person to be reborn in another life. It is like there is a man and he is blindfolded by one person, and the other person turns him towards a steep cliff, and the third man push him down. So in the same way, we are blinded by ignorance. Because we are blinded by ignorance, we do good karma or bad karma. So at the moment of death, the ignorance blinded us, and then craving turns us to another life. And then the karma pushes us down to the next life. And so we are reborn in another life. So rebirth is the product of actually these three things, these three culprits: ignorance, craving, and karma. So long as we are doing karma, we cannot escape the results of this karma. And some karmas may give results in this life, but many give results in future lives. So, considering this, that mind has a great power to give results, and that power cannot be eliminated at death. It has a power to produce even after death something, and so there can be rebirth. The rebirth is the result of what karma we do in the previous lives. So if we can accept the power of mind to produce things, I think we can accept that there is rebirth. Although we cannot see them with our eyes, we cannot show them to see with your own eyes, still there are some things we can think about in support of the fact that there is rebirth. There are many other things we can consider in support of rebirth, but time is limited now. Now, you go to some place where you have not been before, but some things there look very familiar to you. You think you have been here at some time, something like that. Or sometimes you meet a person and you hate him or you love him with no apparent reason. So these are caused by the experiences in the past. So we can consider these things also. So there are many things, but those who don't want to accept will always find something to say against this. And especially in the West, people are afraid to say that they believe in rebirth, because if they say this, they will be shunned by people. Now there are prominent, famous people who wrote something about that, and they are ostracized. Now there is one doctor who interviewed many people who could remember their past lives. So he went to Asia and to many countries and collect data, and then he wrote some books. So one of his books is something like 30 cases suggestive of rebirth or reincarnation. Now, he says suggestive of. Actually, he believed in rebirth, but he was not, brave enough to say that, and this is a proof of rebirth. It is suggestive. These stories are suggestive of rebirth. And in that book, he mentioned many people he interviewed. And when he interviewed, he interviewed systematically, not like we do, because these people, whatever they do it systematically. So, but many people don't like him. But I think now he is accepted. So in the West, it is difficult for especially Western people to accept or to say that they believe in rebirth. For us Eastern people, it comes like nature. We easily believe if someone comes to us and tells about some people who could remember their past lives and who could identify things that they used in their past lives and so on. It's very amazing. They have not been to that place before, but they are able to find out things there and to describe the buildings there and so on. So there is one video called Reincarnation. So a man was reborn in Australia and he died in, I think, in Scotland. So he went back, or he was brought back to the village he was born, and they just put him at the gate of the village, and then he entered the village as though he had been there for many years, and then he would point out houses, and he would greet people there, and it is said that he described the building, a castle, very accurately. And then one thing he said was not in accordance with what was there at the time. So people thought that he was wrong at that point. But later they found out that that building was renovated after his death. And so that was changed. So that change he could not see, or he could not understand. So such things happen in many places to many people. So I'm not forcing you to believe in it, but not to dismiss it easily. So please collect the facts and think about it yourself and do what you like about it. Okay, so long as we have this mental defilement, so long as we have craving, ignorance, and other mental defilements, there will be rebirth for us in the future. Once we are able to eradicate mental defilements altogether, there will be no rebirth in the future. So arahants are those who have eradicated all mental defilements, and they are called those who have achieved the exhaustion of karma. That means they have achieved I don't know what to say. They have made the past karma incapable of giving results by their attainment of arahantship. Now they have acquired a lot of karma in the past, and then now they become arahants. So once they become arahants, all past karmas cannot give results to them as rebirth. The most they can do is give results when they were alive. That is why even Buddhas and arahants still experience the the painful consequences of their karma in the past. But after their death, those karmas are unable to give any results anymore, because the potential to give results in the future lives has been eradicated by the attainment of arahantship. So an arahant is a person who has eradicated all mental defilements, and so who has no more to do regarding the attainment of enlightenment, and who has no more rebirth in this round of rebirth and death. So I exceeded my limit. So to summarize, this discourse of Silavanta and also Sutavanta, these two discourses teach us that observation of the five aggregates of clinging is for all people, for those who have not yet attained any enlightenment, and also for those who have attained the stages of enlightenment, even for those who have reached the highest stage of enlightenment, who have no more to do regarding the attainment of enlightenment. So this practice of vipassana meditation, now observing five aggregates and vipassana meditation as I said. So this practice of vipassana meditation is to be practiced, to be done as long as we live. So it is not a practice to be done occasionally or to be done once in a while and then leave it off. So if we want to improve our spiritual status or spiritual welfare, we should practice vipassana meditation as much as we can. So please practice at home also as much as you can, vipassana meditation or mindfulness meditation, so that when you get a chance to go to a retreat and practice at the retreat, you get into the practice quickly. So vipassana practice is just the one you have to do always, and do not think that you can leave it off after you reach this stage or that stage. Thank you.